Ben Meyerson is here in the studio. He's the news editor for Blue Sky. You read that in the Chicago Tribune, chicagotribune.com. Ben, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Glad to be here, Steve.
Okay, so I want to talk to you about a number of the stories that you guys have had in the past week or so. And this one is about how you can set up something on your phone, on your iPhone or on an Android, so that if you're incapacitated, someone can find out who you are and your medical information. And then when I say it, you know, I don't want to contribute to this "you could be a victim of an attack too" kind of mentality. But the fact is, you could be walking down the street and thunk your head on a light pole or something, and someone who finds you might need to figure out who you are, police even, fire department. And there are ways to set that up.
Yes. So we started thinking about this in the wake of the Las Vegas Route 91 attack. And there was some reporting about folks who were injured and, you know, frankly, dying on the streets. And there were Good Samaritans, passersby, who were trying to figure out who these people were, to get in touch with their loved ones, whether it's law enforcement or just passersby. And there was a story in particular about one young man named Jordan McAldoon. He was 23 years old, and there was a bartender who passed by and started going through his phone and trying to figure out just who he was so she could reach out to his friends. So we thought there's another way to do this. We know about this because we're tech reporters and we write about this stuff all the time. But both Android and iPhones have a way to enter information on your phone so that it's accessible to anyone at all without having to unlock the phone.
Okay, so on my iPhone, I've got my iPhone in front of me, and I go to the health icon. I'm there all the time. This is the first time, and that's where you can set it up, right?
Yes, on your iPhone, it's in the health app, and the setting is called Medical ID. You go in there, you can list your full name, birth dates, medical conditions and medications, blood type, as well as emergency contacts. And anyone can access that from your phone's
locker. So how do they access it? How does that work?
So basically, you enter all that information, and then there's a switch you hit that says show on lock screen.
Okay.
And then if someone picks up your phone and tries to unlock it, right there next to the emergency call button will be another button that just says medical ID. And anyone can touch that and open it up.
Okay, and so that's available. That's how you do it on iPhone. Android's a little different because there are different carriers, but it still can be done.
Yes, exactly. So Android phones, Google sends out this software, and then the various phone makers take it and they change it around in different ways. So it's a little different on every phone. The way that Google built it was supposed to be under the users tab,
right?
But checking a couple of Android phones around here and from some friends, it looked like on the newest Samsung phone and on the newest LG phones, it's in the contacts app. But again, you go in there and you set up the function. It's called emergency information. And you go in there and you can enter your contacts as well as, again, medical conditions, medications, allergies.
Okay, so I want to talk, too, about this isn't really about innovation or business. I guess it is about business and productivity. You wrote the story, right, about sleep and what we need about sleep. No, you wrote the other story.
Yeah, this was my colleague, Carrie Wigginton, wrote this one. It's a really interesting Q&A.
Okay, we all know you need to get 8 hours of sleep, blah, blah, blah. I'm a little proud of the fact that I get about 6.5. And now I read the story and realized that really I'm cheating myself.
Yeah. So this guy, Matthew Walker, is the founder and director of the Center for Sleep Science at University of California at Berkeley. And so he wrote this book that's called Why We Sleep, Unlocking the Power of Sleep and Dreams. And basically he says, if you're getting less than 7 hours of sleep a night, you're in trouble, basically. It's impairing a host of brain functions. You're increasing risk of heart attack, cancer, stroke, things like that. But it also makes you emotionally irrational, less charismatic, and more prone to lying.
No one would ever say that about me, Ben. What are you accusing me of?
Nothing.
But interesting, too, that it says, because you might think you're fine, but it said the studies show that you tend to take on then less productive tasks or less challenging tasks at work. And so less gets done. That's why bosses should pay more attention to how their employees are sleeping.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And then the other thing I always say, I can have a cup of coffee right before I go to bed, and it doesn't keep me awake. I can still fall asleep. This guy says, wait a minute, it still has an impact on your sleep.
Yeah, it'll prevent you from falling asleep, but once you fall asleep, you might not be sleeping quite as firmly. And the really interesting thing he says is that alcohol affects your sleep more than you think. If you've had a drink anytime 6 to 8 hours within falling asleep, yeah, it's going to sedate you because alcohol is a sedative.
Right.
But the act of sedation will also make it so that your brain is sedated and not going into that REM, rapid eye movement sleep, that's really important.
His rule of thumb is if you can wake up without an alarm clock at your designated time, you're probably getting enough sleep. If you rely on the alarm clock, you aren't.
Exactly. And if you're trying to catch up on sleep on the weekend, sleeping longer, you're not. It's not really working for
but
you.
If you do feel the need to sleep in on the weekends, you're probably not getting enough during the week either.
Exactly.
Okay, do you get up without your alarm clock?
It depends on the day.
All right, you look well rested, Ben.
Thank you. You look good.
Catch up this weekend. No, you can't do that.
No.
Ben Meyerson. Read more at blueskyatchicagotribune.com. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
It is Friday. That means Tom Gimbel, the CEO of LaSalle Network, is in the studio. Welcome back, Tom.
How are you, Steve Bertrand?
All right, so you boldly predicted the last time we spoke that the Cubs would sweep the Nationals, and so far there's nothing to prove you wrong.
Exactly right. I'm excellent when there's no games.
And you're going to stick with that, right?
You know what? I really like the Hendricks start today.
Yeah, I do too.
I like that a lot.
You know, he's not going to get flustered. He's not going to be yelling at the umpire in the first inning like a couple pitchers do.
Yep.
So we were joking earlier. The mayor of Washington, the mayor of Chicago, have a bet, right? The mayor of Washington has put up something called half smokes.
You got me nervous because I was having flashbacks to Marion Barry. And I'm wondering what are they betting?
There are a couple of half smokes then too. But you know what a half smoke is?
It's like
a chili dog. It's like a Washington chili dog.
Oh, really?
Right. I had never heard of such a thing.
You think they Federal Express that, or how does that work?
I don't know how that works. I want to talk to you about turning off email at work. But before that, you know, you're a boss. And I was just talking to Ben Meyerson about these sleep studies and about how it was something interesting because, you know, you think of being underslept. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a word, but because then you're yawning, you're tired or whatever. Yep. But this scientist said, well, what also it manifests itself in that employees who don't get enough sleep don't take on challenging tasks during the day or have a reduction in creativity.
Yeah.
I would imagine that's something that you would be concerned with.
Yeah, but you know, you got to look at why people aren't sleeping.
We go any further, how much did you sleep last night?
I slept about 4 hours.
Okay, we'll take that into account. Now your answer.
It's all about why people don't sleep. I mean, if people aren't sleeping because they're working a second job because they're a bartender and they don't want to lose on that money, that's one reason. If somebody's not sleeping because they're up until working until 11 and they're up again at 5 in the morning to go to work and for the same job, that's
right.
A different issue.
Well, not a good issue.
Not a good issue.
Right,
no, that's a challenge, right? And there's short-term problems, right? Month-end close for accountants, a big case for lawyers, whatever the deal is. But to say that somebody's up until 1 in the morning because they're out with their friends and then they're up to go to work in the morning and they're not sleeping, that's not your employer's problem. That's your problem.
Is that right? I mean, so what do you do about that?
Good management has conversations with people, and they say, listen, you look like crap.
Right.
And I know you weren't here right. Past 6:30 last night, so what are you doing?
Excuse me, friend. You look like game one was last night.
Yeah, exactly. Or World Series game seven was last night.
Okay, so talk to me about email. You guys did a thing at the office where you just turned it off for the day.
Every quarter, we do what we call a no email day. So it's not as black and white as it sounds. We do a check-in at 11 and a check-in at 4 for 20 minutes, and but the email auto reply is set on. It says
so people know it.
Absolutely. Okay. It says you can reach me at the phone 312-419-1700 for LaSalle Network, Steve. And
no one noticed that at all. What was it again?
But the goal is no inner office email. So you've got
that's
to get
the
up.
Big part.
Truthfully, that's really the big part.
Right. I get up and walk around upstairs a lot, and not because I want to talk to people, but because it's just I like to get up and move around. I just get claustrophobic. But there's value, and then you see someone in the hall, and you just chat with them because the conversation gets a lot more done a lot more quickly, and the understanding is much more thorough.
You look somebody in the eye, right, and you know what they mean. They mean what they say, and it's also – there's a sense of urgency. I got to get this done. I'm not going to type it and then wait for the response. I'm coming up to you.
And then it's over. The other thing is, and I remember talking to a guy who did this out on the West Coast years ago, and he said, then you start learning about your coworkers' kids in Little League.
Absolutely.
Or their science project, the stuff that doesn't come up in an email.
It builds stronger bonds. I mean, we have a very social group, and it's there anyways, but I still have people that go, oh, I didn't know Sally in that group over
there.
And it's like, she's 20 feet away from you. I mean, I have people that work in one group, we'll transfer them to another group, then they don't go to lunch anymore with the old group. It's like it's 20 feet. Right. You don't have to stop relationships.
So how is the no email received in the work in your workplace?
In the workplace, it's received really, really well. A little bit of anxiety of new people who are like, right. What do I do?
Do you have any cheaters?
Absolutely. Absolutely cheaters. And the funny thing is I was in a meeting in the morning. And I didn't look at what time it was, and I sent one like at 8:15, and at 11:20.
Well, you hadn't slept enough the night before.
Exactly. We can tie all this together. Right. At 11:15, people checked their email, and I had like four people because it was a group email send it back and go, "You suck, you cheated." Right. So, quite frankly, that collegiality is a positive that comes out of it.
Tom LaSalle, the CEO of LaSalle Network. Where do people find out more information about you?
If you didn't catch that number the first time,
what
312-419-1700 if you need a job, if you're hiring people, LaSalleNetwork.com.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks, buddy.
Next time I see you, it'll be the NLCS.
Yeah, we'll have swept 3-0.
All right. My friend Brad Meltzer is on the program now. I don't know if you know Brad through his thrillers, through the work he did on TV, maybe the comics. Brad Meltzer has been on the bestseller list for fiction, nonfiction, advice books, children's books, comic books, just about all of it. And, well, he's in town right now because he's going to run in the Chicago Marathon on Sunday. Right, Brad?
If you want to see me die on the street, that is what I would do.
So Brad Meltzer is one of my oldest friends in this business. It's great to talk to you again, friend. You're in town talking about these I Am books, right? The kids' books.
Yeah, we're going to be in Winnetka tonight, the bookstall at 4:30. And these books were started as a totally different offshoot of my own business, which is usually thrillers. But I was tired of my kids looking at reality TV show stars and people who were famous for being famous and thinking that that's a hero.
All right. I'm sorry, Brad, I'm interrupting you. But so this is a business show, and I want to talk to you about those books in a couple of minutes. But I want to talk to you about being a businessman and adaptability as well, because I talked about all of the different things. I mean, go back to Jack and Bobby, which was in, the mid-early 90s, that TV show. You seem to have an ability to see what's next and to do it. And I think a lot of business people would benefit from that. So is that a skill that you've developed? Is that sort of an innate thing, or is it a dumb luck thing? Tell me about that.
You know, I credit my friend Simon Sinek, who helped me figure it out. And Simon has one of the great business TED Talks of all time. And he talks about finding your why, and that every life is a bullseye with three circles. And the outside circle is what you do. We all know what we do. The middle circle is how you do what you do. If you're a plumber, you know you put this pipe next to this pipe, you screw them together. For a writer, and even for your job, Steve, is, you know, it's a little bit more gut instinct. It's not just talk, but you got to, in your gut, know how to do it. So some people know how, and some people just intuitively go for it. But the key circle is that inner circle, which is why you do what you do. And Apple Computer doesn't just sell phones or music players. Apple Computer sells the idea. They know what their why. They buy it to think different. And that's why people will wait in line. And for me, I know my why.
I was going to say, though, to succeed with your why, you've got to kind of know what sort of how is going to be popular next, right? I mean, do you see change coming and adapt to it, or does your why just sort of lead you there?
No, I rely on one thing. I'm not that special. And so if I, you know, in the case with these kids' books, I was tired and wanted something for my own kids, but I wasn't special. There were thousands of parents out there who want better heroes for their own kids. So I just followed what I wanted and relied on the fact I'm not that special. And my instinct led me right there. But again, I never try and anticipate where the market's going to be, because you can't predict the future. What you have to do is go after what you're passionate about. And those are the things that have worked for me. Jack and Bobby was a passion that I knew I had an idea for a TV show. It would make a good book, but I was so passionate about it. And I think that's why it worked. It wasn't that I predicted the future in some ways, but I was able to bring my own why and my own level of intensity to that project. And it's the same thing with a kids' book, with a thriller, with the fiction books, even with the TV shows we do on the History Channel, is, you know, my why is simple. It's I believe ordinary people change the world.
All right,
I don't care where you went to school, but that drives every project I do.
I keep, and even you keep saying kids book, and that almost sounds a little dismissive, which isn't. These books are called I Am, and then you take someone who is a hero or heroine and then write about them. They're drawn as if they're children. I remember we talked about Amelia Earhart a few years ago. The current books are Gandhi and Sacagawea, right?
Yeah, and let's talk about the market right now, because, again, on that business front, when we started this, I had no idea where the world was going to be. But the world right now is starving for heroes. And the one thing we saw as the presidential election approached is suddenly two books of our I Am series started taking off more than any others. And they were I Am Martin Luther King Jr. and I Am George Washington. And it wasn't a Democrat or Republican thing. It was there were parents on both sides were tired of turning on the TV and looking at politicians. They wanted to show their kids heroes. And again, that's exactly what I wanted. And that's what's happened. In the book industry, almost everything is kind of slowly going down.
Right,
these heroes
right.
books have been up because there's that appetite for people who want real heroes. And that was just, I wish I could say that was business acumen, but that was just the luck of we had this heroes inspiring series in the right place at the right time.
Well, I mean, there's acumen to be in that right place at the right time, too. But that to tell me a little bit, you did see just after election, your book sales soar.
Yeah, and listen, even for Gandhi, you know, I said I'm going to do I Am Gandhi, which is the newest book, you know, and I had no idea. I wrote this book to teach my kids that no one wins in a fight. But here we are, Steve, in this market and political environment where we're slaughtering each other every
yeah.
day, where we're, you know, we're playing us versus them, and I'm tired of playing us versus them. It's time to get back to we. And, you know, again, Gandhi stands for that exact idea that we need to be better than what angers us. We need to teach our kids to make friends rather than enemies. And, you know, I love that I get to put that out into the universe.
Talk to me a little bit about Sacagawea, too, because, I mean, here's a story, a woman who achieved great success, but there's some dark sides to that as well, right? She was basically held captive.
She was, and you know, my daughter's not impressed by anything I do, but she read I Am Sacagawea. She said, Dad, this one's actually really good. And I was like, I'm gonna get that tattoo, right? This one's actually really good. But the dark side is exactly right, and I think it's a good business lesson as well. At the end of her life, when the path with Lewis and Clark is over, she's returned to her Shoshone tribe, and she sees her brother, who's now fully grown. He's the chief of the tribe. And think about this in context of your own life and your own business. He says to her, you're done. Why don't you come back with us? Forget Lewis and Clark. The journey's over, and where you're going next, you're not even going to know how to speak that Native American language. It's a different tribe. Just stay here. And to this day, nobody knows why Sacagawea didn't just stay with her family. And it wasn't because she was kidnapped. She wanted to go. And they don't know if it's because she, you know, felt like she was part of the team. She just wanted the grand adventure. But as it says in the book to your own kids, what would you do?
Right.
And how your child answers that question decides the grand adventure in life. And that's for all of us decides, are you going to take what you have or are you going to go on the grand adventure? And to me, you got to go.
We're about out of time, friend. I'm going to take an extra minute, though, because I want you to explain your theory about you said one time to me, you said, if you tell me who your hero is, I'll tell you who you are. Put some meat on that bone.
It's one of my core beliefs. And, you know, what heroes are in the culture is they're mirrors. And we hold them up. And the hero you have reflects that thing you care about. You know, if it's Abraham Lincoln, it's because you care about speaking your mind and speaking for others. If it's Amelia Earhart, it's, you know, that you know no bounds and you dare. And if it's someone like Gandhi, you want to, in a gentle way, shake the world. Or, you know, Sacagawea is about the idea of you're going to blaze your own trail. And that's why on the back of every book, we put that value. Because we knew these aren't history books. We wanted to give people a value. And I think it reflects, and the reason they've taken off is because parents want those values for their kids. And to me, that reflects who we are as a culture. It always will, and always.
Brad Meltzer, hey, it was great to talk to you. I appreciate you squeezing me in. I know you're busy. You got a thriller coming out in the spring, right?
We do. In March is The Escape Artist. You won't believe where the government let me sneak in. And I'm going to try and get face-to-face with you for that one because, you know, I love being in Chicago.
All right, buddy. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks, brother.
Our number of the week is 940,000 in honor of World Dairy up there in Madison. 940,000 metric tons of butter. That's how much we as Americans take in each and every year. All right, it is 12:53 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Looking for something to do this weekend? How about a car auction? Dave Majors is the CEO of Mecum Auctions, and he joins us on a phone line now. Dave, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Good afternoon. Thank you. We're underway here in Schaumburg with Mecum Auction.
Is today Black Hawks Day, or is it all weekend, or what is that?
Today was Black Hawks Day, and we started the morning with a number of the Black Hawks executive management here, and my good friend Jim Cornelison kicked us off with his you know, always stunning rendition nice. Of the national anthem, and the excitement has stayed at that level ever since.
Okay, you're going to have to do this as sort of a Cars for Dummies for me, because the Mecum Auctions is the biggest car auction company in the country. Is that correct?
We are the world's largest collector car auction. We will hold 14 collector car events across the country this year, taking about 15,000 cars to auction for a total value of a little over $500 million.
And there are going to be 1,000 cars auctioned this weekend, give or take?
You bet. We had 1,000 cars here in Schaumburg. A little bit of a home game for us.
Right.
Our corporate offices are just north of here in the Lake Geneva, Wisconsin area. And we started here yesterday. We're doing a little over 300 cars a day, and once we start the auction, we run a car across the block every minute and a half until we finish
wow.
the day.
So you guys are in Lake Geneva now, but it got started about 30 years ago in Marengo.
You bet. Dana Mecum and his wife Patty started Mecum Auctions, which has now grown into the, as I said, the world's largest collector car auction, on their kitchen table in their tiny home in Marengo, Illinois. And we still have quite a few of our employees that are from the northwestern suburbs and Marengo and Rockford and the Wisconsin area. And I, myself, live downtown Chicago.
Really? Okay, so Dave, explain for me how this works. So these are collector cars. So they're vintage cars, they're hot rods, or what's out there?
Well, pretty much everything that you can think of. There's, you know, we have pre-war cars, we have hot rod cars, there are late model exotics. Everything that would be of a special interest, you know, limited production, not necessarily all antiques. We specialize at Mecum Auctions in 1950s, 1960s, 1970s American muscle cars, and you'll see a heavy concentration of Corvettes even in that. But it doesn't really matter what year you're looking for, what make, what model, and what your pocketbook is. It's probably here at a Mecum Auction someplace.
What percentage of the people who are going to be out there in Schaumburg this weekend bring their pocketbooks, and what percentage are, you know, just out there to check it all out?
Well, it's if nothing else, it's a great car show. It's a great place to come and see 1,000 beautiful cars, bring the family, teach your kids about history through cars. And sometimes, you know, we all have a history with cars, and it's a good idea to teach your kids about your history through cars. And probably 90% of the people that come through our gate will not be wearing bitter badges. They're just coming for the show.
You have any Pintos? Because a lot of my history through cars involves Pintos. I don't know if you got a show out there for them.
We sold yesterday a beautiful 1973 Pinto. I swear to you, your car is already gone.
Did you have to exit through the passenger side? Because that could have been my car.
No, it looked like it just come off the showroom floor.
Dave Major, CEO of Mecum Auctions. All right, where do people find more information about the show this weekend?
You can find everything you need to know at Mecum, MECUM.com. And if you're coming out to bid and you register to bid online before you come, you can do that for half the price that it would cost to come here and do it at the auction. And if you register or buy your tickets online, you'll save $10 just for the general admission ticket.
All right, we sold 3 cars during the time we were talking.
I hope we sold more than that.
It's the winter. Nice to talk to you. Good luck this weekend.
All right, thank you.